Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of A Quick Pint. Now, today I would like to talk about the tragic Titanic submersible incident in which five people, of course, lost their lives because they went down, very deep down into the ocean in order to explore the wreck of the Titanic. And we've been treated to the quite appalling sight of the compassionate left complaining that, if these people have got £250,000 each to be able to spend on going on this submersible and exploring the Titanic, then we're not taxing them enough. But let's put that aside. I'm afraid that extremely rich people do bleed when you cut them, no matter what relatively rich people that write for The Guardian would like us to think. And therefore, I am particularly interested in the psychology of those people. Why would it be that people that were that wealthy, that had that much money, would be inclined to spend that much money on doing something that is, it's fascinating, it's interesting, it's exploring this this wreck that's over 100 years old, that's a highly significant symbol in Western culture, but it's also extraordinarily dangerous, and they have suffered the consequences in that they have died. It was essentially bad quality equipment didn't work properly, equipment where, for politically correct reasons, they weren't employing the best people in order to build it, and they took this tremendous risk, they died. Now, what would be the psychology of that? Well, there are two dimensions I want to look at. One is why the psychology of people that become mega rich would cross over with taking a risk of that kind, which ultimately is fatal. And the second being why people who are already mega rich would be themselves inclined, independent of that factor, to take risks. Now, the first factor, extreme risks. Now, the first factor is that to a certain subsection within the population, danger is exciting. And to a certain, and novelty, extreme novelty, doing very unusual things is exciting. And these people are easily bored. And these people have certain personality traits. In particular, they are high in extroversion. I'd say they feel positive feelings strongly. So they crave a constant need for stimulation. And in pronounced cases, this is going to be extreme stimulation, where it crosses over into what other people would say, well, yeah, this may give me a thrill, but this is scary. This is dangerous. I am not going to do this. The kind of people that would do parachute jumps or whatever. Some people would say, oh, this is just too dangerous. Well, for some people, that's nothing. And secondly, a desire for novelty. That is a personality trait called openness, intellect. A desire for extreme novelty would imply that you are very high in openness, intellect, and intelligence crosses over with openness, intellect at about 0.3. So if you have those two personality traits together, or three, if you like, well, two plus intelligence, openness, intellect, plus extroversion, and you have them to an extreme extent, then you will be really, really desirous of risk. It won't be risk for you. You won't even see it as risk, in a way, because the payoff will be so high in terms of what you receive psychologically. And what you will receive is dopamine. The body will give you dopamine for being stimulated. The body will give you dopamine for overcoming your boredom and whatever. The body will pump you with these positive feelings because on some level in our prehistory, it is adaptive to take risks. If we don't take risks, then we don't get a payoff. We don't get the necessary food or whatever. So it is adaptive to some extent to take risks. So what this can lead to then is a kind of an addiction where certain thrill seekers, thrill junkies, danger junkies, where people become addicted to something that is dangerous or something that is novel, and they then engage in more and more and more and more extreme thrills to get the same hit. Because once you've already done it and you've done it, it's not really dangerous anymore. You've done it. There's no danger of death, really, or you don't see it as such when you've already done it. And so then you move on to something even more extreme. Now, what's been found in experimental conditions is that you can make people more risk averse if they believe that they are going to lose money that they already have. You can make people more risk averse if you expose them simply to ideas of loss and losing anything that they already have. And so there's a sense in which people that have that are closer to the breadline, as it were, may take risks because, well, they've nothing to lose because they could just die anyway. But people that have a certain amount of wealth, that they could lose, those people will be less inclined to take risks because they don't want to lose what they have. People that have a fantastically high amount of wealth, losing a lot of money by normal standards for them is nothing. So therefore, they will continue to take the risks. So the consequence is that you can therefore see why, in terms of these priming materials, people that are fantastically wealthy will be inclined to take extreme risks in pursuit of dopamine, because they won't. Even if they lose a lot of wealth or whatever, they've still got loads of wealth. So there's less to militate against them taking extreme risks. The related reason to this is the kind of people who manage to accrue and maintain, maintain extreme levels of wealth. And there is a certain kind of character or psychology that is involved in this. The first is simply high intelligence, and high intelligence crosses over with openness, as I said. And the second is a certain kind of personality type that we call the general factor of personality. And this takes elements of the big five that you will have perhaps heard of, ocean, that is to say openness, conscientiousness, that's impulse control, extroversion, feeling positive, feeling strongly, agreeableness, altruism, empathy, and neuroticism, feeling negative feelings strongly, particularly in this regard, things like social anxiety. And you take these are factor analyzed down from larger numbers of traits. And you take the socially effective elements of each of those big five personality traits, and those tend to correlate together into one underlying general factor of personality, which is, are you socially effective or are you not socially effective? And if you are socially effective, then that is what is going to predict, in combination with intelligence, accruing wealth. People that are rich will tend to be high in this GFP, general factor of personality, accruing wealth. Now, what is a significant component of this, general factor of personality? It is high openness, and therefore a desire for novelty, and it is high extroversion, and therefore a constant desire for stimulation, and so forth. So in a sense, the traits which would predict wealth, i.e. high general factor of personality, are also going to predict taking extreme risks, thrills, that sort of thing. And moreover, then, the wealthier you are, the less a potential financial loss or potential loss in general will militate against you taking those risks, because you will just feel that you're invincible, basically, and nothing can possibly go wrong. Now, the second component that I think is relevant is, I guess, a more clearly evolutionary component, which is the idea of feeling something. We are in an evolutionary mismatch. We are in a zoo, and that is why a lot of us are so unhappy and have to do things to make us happy, find ways to make us happy, find ways to just for a moment be outside the zoo. When you are in the wild, you don't really have time to think. Your evolutionary match is the wild, is the savannah, or at the very least an agricultural economy where there is fighting and war and so forth. In that context, our evolutionary match is to be surrounded by death, is to be surrounded by instability, is to be surrounded by the possibility of invasion from other groups, is to be surrounded by dirt, is to be surrounded by all kinds of horrible things. Now, when that happens, that's our evolutionary match, and because that's our evolutionary match, our normal instincts that we are evolved to have, such as religious belief, for example, but there are many others, a desire for children, that's one of them. When we are in our evolutionary match, those instincts hit in, a sense that life has eternal meaning, even. We don't really have to think and worry about the, because we're living according to our instincts, and we don't really have to think about, we don't get bored, we don't get ennui, and we just basically kind of, ironically, in the face of death or whatever, we feel good because the death happens, and this is our evolutionary match, and therefore we feel that life has eternal meaning and everything's going to be okay. So that's what we're supposed to be living in, and in that context, people tend to be happier, ironically. Because that's their match. That's not a zoo. The closer they are to that, the happier they tend to be. The more likely they are to have religious experiences that tell them that everything is going to be okay. The more they just don't need to think. So obviously, the closer you are to that match, then there is a sense in which you will be more instinctive, and you will have there will be less boredom, less of a need to less of a need to wind yourself up and stimulate yourself. And I think that that's what we're seeing with these very rich people. They are in such an extreme evolutionary mismatch. We know if you prime people with wealth, poverty, they become, and with death, they become more desirous for children and more desirous to name children after themselves, i.e. they become more instinctive. These super rich people have, through their own efforts or what they've inherited or whatever, been completely taken away from that. They are in an extreme evolutionary mismatch. With the result that they will feel an extreme sense of boredom and listlessness, and they just won't feel, as it were, alive. They won't feel alive in the moment, as you would do if you were fighting for your life or struggling for food or whatever. And so it would follow that they would have to do things to make themselves feel alive, i.e. put themselves in an evolutionary match, a situation of danger, a situation of mortality salience. And I suspect this is what they have done. And there was an interesting paper called The Psychological Benefits of a Scary Play in Three Types of Horror Films, which showed that you have three kinds of people that really like horror films. The adrenaline junkie, the white knuckler, and the dark coper. Now, what are you doing by watching a horror film? You are, in a sense, to the extent that you can suspend disbelief and be sort of hypnotized and be drawn into the film, you are putting yourself in an evolutionary match. You are putting yourself in a situation of danger. You are putting yourself in a situation of terror. You are putting yourself in a situation where you might be killed. And it looked at what people get out of this. And so the adrenaline junkie, he just gets an intense sense of enjoyment. He's just happy in the moment. And you can see how actually doing something dangerous, well, if you are all the time, you've no worries about money, you've no worries about anything that matters. You're gonna get a sense of enjoyment. You're gonna feel good. The second was the white knuckler, as it was known. These people, this is very interesting, they report a sense of personal growth, i.e., how can we put that in different words? They feel almost more a greater understanding of themselves. They feel that life has greater meaning, greater purpose in response to watching a horror film. And the third group, the dark coper, they get a sense of both, i.e. they get a sense of enjoyment out of it, they get thrill, but also they get a sense of personal growth. And so my suspicion would be that if you transpose that over to these poor five dead people, then that's probably what explains why people that are super wealthy would do things like that. And it's been explored in Squid Game. The idea has been explored in various phenomena that if you're that rich, you're that out of touch with your evolutionary match, you're just listless and bored, and you need to do something to put you back in touch with the world outside the zoo. And I'm afraid that's what they did in a fairly major way, with seriously tragic consequences.
Hello, hello, hello! The Jolly Heretic is an online public house which meets on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss the kind of based, fearless science which is increasingly expunged from our woke, joke universities. If you would like to help the Jolly Heretic public house, and there are many ways you can do so, please, please, please become one of my patrons on Subscribestar. Also, if you want to, you can donate to the channel using Odyssey and Entropy, and you can also purchase Jolly Heretic merchandise, such as shirts and mugs. All of the links are in the description. Again, I'd be most violently grateful if you could assist the Jolly Heretic Public House, and I will see you all soon, and goodbye!